On this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
Pretty severe skin and nerve and infections that aren't responding to traditional care, they then go into this high pressure, high oxygen environment, and typically with pretty good results.
So theoretically, if I could crawl in this thing and have more oxygen for a workout, if I were to do a workout mid-morning or mid-afternoon, for example.
The Viteris was built to actually have two people inside, so you might not be have to sacrifice your marriage.
Health, performance, nutrition, longevity, ancestral living, biohacking, and much more. My name is Ben Greenfield. Welcome to the show. Oh, well, hello. Thank you for stopping by the podcast, which is actually kind of cool today. We're going to be talking about hyperbaric oxygen therapy, which might sound like some fringe thing a NASA astronaut would do to recover after space travel, but that I have found increasingly interesting and useful for myself when I'm not just traveling, but now when I'm at home, for everything from hyperoxygenation to aiding in killing bacteria, assisting with angiogenesis or the formation of new blood vessels, a surge of a really good antioxidant called superoxide dismutase, fibroblast production, collagen production, bone density, a decrease in inflammation. The more I look into HBOT, the more I am impressed with it. So I figured it was high time I did an actual podcast on what the heck HBOT is. So I think you're going to dig this one.
Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You got to check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder. You put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. Contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their sexual performance booster, again by Joy Mode, your blood levels of arginine and yohimbine increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris. My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. usejoymode.com/greenfield. They'll give you 20% off your first order. Last night, I got my shipment in. That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones, the ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original. They've got one that's like a summer sausage. They have a garlic sausage. They have a teriyaki. It's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks. Well, if you're tired of spending hours on cardio with minimal results, then listen up, because I got a game-changing fitness breakthrough for you. The Carol Bike, science-backed, time-saving solution trusted by experts for optimizing health and longevity. They use a special form of a workout called a rehit, which allows you to achieve superior health and fitness benefits compared to regular cardio in 90% less time. That's amazing. That's a lot of time, 90%. Studies show that by doing Carol's 5-minute workout just 3 times a week, you can improve your fitness by 12%, reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and even wind back your internal body clock by 10 years. The science is clear. Carol Bike is your ticket to a healthier and more vibrant life. You got to try it to believe it and to see what I'm saying. I mean, it's not like a walk in the park. When you're pushing hard in those intervals, you're pushing, but then it's just like over and it's done and it walks you through it. It's very motivating. It's 5 feet away from me right now. It's right here in my office, my cool little exercise toy in my office. So you get $250 off your Carol Bike. You don't have to wait any longer. You can join over 25,000 riders and visit carolbike.com today. Carolbike.com.
All right, folks, it's Ben, and I have talked about this a few times, alluded to it before on a few podcasts, and many of you know I now have this strange tube in my basement that I climb into that my kids and my wife are also now using to concentrate pressurized oxygen that we breathe for recovery, for jet lag. I take naps in there. I do breathwork protocols in there. It's called hyperbaric oxygen therapy. Hyperbaric oxygen therapy. It's also known as HBOT. Now, you may have heard about HBOT before. It's been used in medical clinics for a long time, but it's kind of like hitting the biohacking and the health scene now for uses that go beyond simply medical management of, say, a wound or TBI or concussion or something like that. And I recently got my hands on this brand new book called Oxygen Under Pressure. Oxygen Under Pressure, using hyperbaric oxygen to restore health, reduce inflammation, reverse aging, and revolutionize healthcare. And this book really is a great kind of scientific treatise of exactly what HBOT is and how to use it properly. Everything from how frequently should you use it to the effect it has on stem cells to how it might surge an increase in antioxidants, specifically superoxide dismutase, how it works for the gut and how it can impair bacterial metabolism of certain type of gut issues, how it can increase fibroblast and collagen production, osteoblast production for bone density. Really interesting host of things that I wanted to dive into today. So the hyperbaric chamber I've been using in my basement now, it's right next to my sauna. It's a soft shell chamber. I can pick it up, move it anywhere in the house. And it was very simple to set up. It's called a Viteris 320. And I got it from this company called HBOT USA. Well, Jason Saunders, my guest today, is actually the owner and clinical director of New Jersey Hyperbaric Oxygen Center and also a family wellness center there where he practices as a chiropractic physician. But he's also the owner of HBOT USA and just studies this stuff all day long and is one of the few guys who I've found who can speak to just about every single aspect from both practical to scientific when it comes to HBOT. So I decided I should get him on the show and we should chat about all things breathing pure oxygen. Everything that we talk about, you can access in terms of the show notes. If you want to check out the model, the HBOT chamber I've been using, etc., all of that's going to be at bengreenfieldfitness.com/HBOT. bengreenfieldfitness.com/HBOT. I also have a link over there bengreenfieldfitness.com/HBOT podcast. It's bengreenfieldfitness.com/HBOT podcast. But if you go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/HBOT, you can check out the chamber I've been using and learn more about what Jason does. And they've set up a discount for my listeners too, if anybody wants to get a chamber for their home or for their clinic. So Jason, sorry about that long intro, but welcome to the show, man.
That was a great intro. Thank you. Thanks for having me. Good summary.
I pride myself on my fantastic introductions. Been practicing for a long time. I practiced in front of the mirror last night just to prepare just for that.
Perfect.
Yeah. So you, I don't think, from what I understand, just kind of like stumbled across HBOT and began to implement it in your clinic. Did you begin to use this personally for personal issues before you kind of realized everything else that it could do?
Yeah. So like you said, so we have a clinic in New Jersey and we've been in practice for 16 years and I actually herniated a disc and I had a really pretty terrible neuropathy in my right foot. And my wife's also a chiropractor. I was getting treated. you know, we're very into nutrition and all different modalities. So at the time, we were doing everything we knew how to do to help me. And I was back to work and I was pain free in about maybe 2 weeks. But I was left with this drop foot in my right foot for over a year and a half after that injury. And looking for a solution everywhere, because, you know, I was 20, gosh, I think I was 25 or 26 at the time. And, you know, just trying to figure out, how am I going to get my leg back? How am I going to get my foot back? And so, you know, we came across hyperbaric oxygen, and that was the thing. That was like the one thing that actually took a few months of treatment, but that was the one thing that finally gave me my foot back, the feeling and the function back. So once I saw that, actually, my stepdad has MS, and at the time was recently diagnosed with a pretty aggressive version of MS. And so we started treating him next, and he had amazing results. So once I saw, you know, it helped my neuropathy, and even though MS was a totally different mechanism, but it's also neurologic, you know, neuropathic, and it helped him so much, I said, wow, there's something here. I need to, you know, before I even bring it into my clinic, I need to know why this is happening. And that's when I started really diving, you know, pretty deep into the science and the research to kind of try to figure that out.
Okay. Go ahead. I don't want to.
No, I was just saying, then we started, that's when we started actually implementing it in our clinic.
Okay. Now I want to know a little bit more about how it would have existed anyways, from a pure medical standpoint, like how this thing has been used in medicine, because I don't think a lot of people realize how rich a history it has in medical use. But before we do, I think we should probably step back and clarify exactly what HBOT is. So can you explain hyperbaric oxygen to people?
Sure. So hyperbaric oxygen, honestly, so hyperbaric, so increased pressure, and then oxygen, so increased pressure of oxygen. And there's a lot of different setups. So it could literally just be increased pressure of air, because we know air is 21% oxygen. So if you took air and just pressurized it, that would be hyperbaric oxygen. It would also be hyperbaric nitrogen, for that matter. And then you could
because air has nitrogen.
Oh, sorry, because air, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you could add different amounts of pressure and different amounts of oxygen to create different doses, if you will, of gases to affect our body. And so it's been used traditional medicine for a while. I mean, it's been around 300 plus years in a couple different ways. But I'd say since the 60s and 70s, it's been used more traditionally in hospitals. But really, it's only saved for very particular, pretty severe conditions. So they'll use it for gangrene, osteonecrosis, osteomyelitis, radiation burns or other skin burns, non-healing wounds, diabetic neuropathy. So, you know, pretty severe skin and nerve and infections, you know, that aren't responding to traditional care, they then go into this, you know, high pressure, high oxygen environment, and typically with, you know, pretty good results.
Okay. So in terms of something like, let's say, wound care, how exactly would exposure to high amounts of oxygen actually affect that?
So, you know, and it's in the book too, there's a handful of mechanisms that happen to all of us. If we go into a hyperbaric environment, pressurized oxygen environment, there are things that happen to us, and they happen to all of us. And they have to do a lot with just increasing oxygen levels, increasing mitochondrial performance, so the ability to make, you know, cell energy, ATP, you know, stem cell release, bacterial management, as you alluded to earlier, collagen synthesis, fibrinogen, all the energy and the cell signaling that our body requires to heal happens because as the body is exposed to this increased oxygen level, it sees a fuel source or a nutrient, if you will, that it could use to further push that process. Most of the issues that are, you know, even with those indications that are used in the hospital, most of those have to do with microcirculation damage, so damage to the capillaries. And that's where gas exchange occurs. So where our body is collecting oxygen and bringing it into the cell, or dumping carbon dioxide back into the bloodstream to go back to be exhaled, that all happens in these small capillaries. And anytime we have trauma, infection, any kind of injury like this, the microcirculation is damaged, and therefore gas exchange is hindered. And hyperbaric oxygen, because of the way that it works, it actually bypasses a lot of where that damaged microcirculation is, and it's able to get oxygen into places that are, you know, literally oxygen starved for that time.
Okay, so when you climb into one of these chambers, how exactly are they built to achieve that effect? I mean, is this like some kind of a pressurizer combined with an oxygen concentrator, or what's exactly happening inside that chamber?
So right now, like as we're having this conversation, I'm sure a lot of your audience is aware of this, but you know, in order to get oxygen moving around your body, we require red blood cells.
I thought you were going to say you were inside an HBOT chamber, which wouldn't surprise
me. I should be. I don't have a good signal in there, so I can't do that. So if we require oxygen to be attached to a red blood cell, the red blood cell travels around to the circulation, dumps the oxygen into our cell, picks up carbon dioxide, brings it back to our lungs, and we exhale. That's normal gas exchange, if you will, you know, in our body. But right now, as we sit here, we're about 97-98% saturated, meaning our bodies are getting almost as much oxygen as we could possibly get.
You mean if you were to put on like a pulse oximeter on your fingertip, which is actually a great way to monitor your oxygen status, you should ideally just in a normal living situation outside the chamber, you're going to be about 97-98%?
Exactly. Okay. So if without any heart or lung issues, we all typically run very high 90s in terms of our ability to deliver oxygen to our cell. So if we had a mask and a tank of oxygen, and we were to breathe that right now, we can go from, let's say, 97 to 100. So we can get about 3% maybe, but you could never be more than 100% saturated. And so the biggest difference here is under pressure, you're literally, you're increasing the gradient, the pressure gradient of oxygen, which means you're increasing the diffusion, how much oxygen you could absorb. And so as a result of pressure, you're actually going to dissolve oxygen into the plasma. Usually, we only carry oxygen in red blood cells, not in the plasma of our blood. But because of this pressurized environment, we're actually dissolving gas, oxygen, into the plasma, the liquid of the blood. And so all of a sudden, we could bypass the red blood cell carrying capacity and deliver many, many times more oxygen to a particular area of our body than we could if we were just relying on our red blood cells.
Now, does the actual pressure matter? Because I know there's like hard shell chambers, there's soft shell chambers, there's, I think in your book you call it ATA, which I forget what that stands for, but it's the actual amount of saturation in the air that you're breathing. Can you get into the different forms of delivery and how much oxygen you'd actually need in one of these chambers?
Sure. So all gases move because of gradient. So things go from high concentration to low concentration or from high pressure to low pressure. So right now, wherever you happen to live, you're in equilibrium with the air that's around you. And if you go into a pressurized environment, all of a sudden, the pressure outside your body is much greater than what your body is used to. And as a result, that gradient starts dissolving increases of oxygen into your body. So you're asking, you know, does it matter how much you get? What I would say is the more pressure you're exposed to and the higher percentages of oxygen you're exposed to, the larger the gradient that will create, which also means the larger the diffusion will be inside your body. So, you know, some people could use a hyperbaric chamber that just uses air. So air is 21% oxygen. And let's say the chamber you have goes to ATA is atmosphere is absolute. So the amount of, you know, the relative amount of pressure. You could also use PSI and millimeters of mercury. All these pressure units virtually mean the same thing. So, but, you know, you can go to 1.3 atmospheres, which is what your chamber does, at 21% oxygen, and that will create a certain amount of diffusion into your body. Or you could add, let's say, like we just did, add an oxygen concentrator to that. And now all of a sudden, instead of 21% oxygen you're breathing, you're going to be breathing, let's say, about 94-95% oxygen.
And if you're using an oxygen concentrator in a soft shell chamber, you would actually need a mask placed over your mouth to be able to breathe the extra oxygen that's being delivered, or is that just getting pumped into the chamber itself?
Well, I mean, the way it's set up, it could just be pumped into the chamber, but okay. to maximize the absorption for you, you would have a mask on. That way you're the more of that you breathe under the whatever pressure you're in at the chamber, the higher the dosage of oxygen.
Okay. Now, what about the these big hard shell ones you find in hospitals? Do people need to wear masks when they're in those, or are those built differently so that the oxygen's more concentrated?
So it could be both. So you could have a hard chamber, which is also pressurized with air, and then have oxygen, either concentrated oxygen or 100%, you know, green tank oxygen. And that could be supplied through a mask or a hood of some type. Or it, typically in a hospital setting, the entire chamber is actually filled and pressurized with 100% oxygen, so that there's literally nothing else in, no other gases really in there other than the oxygen itself.
All right. Now I have a quick question for you. How much does one of those hard shell chambers inside a hospital cost? Like, do you know the approximate price point?
So I'd say there's three types of chambers. There's going to be like hospital grade versions that are 100% filled and pressurized with oxygen, and you're looking at probably close to $200,000, plus the cost of oxygen, obviously, which is, you know, it's not that expensive, but when you're filling a full chamber and running it for an hour or two, it's quite a bit. It adds up. And then a chamber that might be a hard chamber, but is not filled with 100% oxygen, it's filled with air, and you could add oxygen separately. That's you're looking closer to like somewhere between 90 and 100.
Okay.
Versus,
and then yeah, this one that I have, this Vitaris 320, how much was that one?
So that's about 22,000.
Okay, so 22,000. And then for like a more of an entry level unit, what's the cost on something like that?
Maybe more like 15.
Okay, got it. So basically what you can do with a soft shell, if you have an oxygen concentrator with it, you can get close to most of the performance and recovery effects you'd be looking at with one of these fancy hospital hard shell chamber units or these bigger hard shell chamber units, but you just got to pump a little extra oxygen into it.
Correct.
Okay, got it. So I want to ask you a few questions too about this whole performance and recovery piece and what exactly you see. But before I do, I'm curious, when we're talking about the type of effects that these things can have, are we talking about doing like multiple treatments, multiple days in a row? Are we talking about one single time that you're laying inside it? Or what's the actual use frequency and volume of one of these things?
So just like the tool you would choose, let's say soft versus hard and 100% oxygen, mild pressure versus high pressure, you have to match the right tool, let's say, to the right goals, I would say. And, you know, same thing in terms of frequency and duration. So depending on what goals you're looking to achieve would determine, you know, how often, how long you should stay in, how many times you should use it, for how many months, or should it be ongoing? So, you know, I try to match, you know, patient or client goals with like equipment and protocol. But, you know, I usually break it down into like short-term and long-term benefits. So short-term, like literally from the first time you step in there and you get pressurized and you're breathing, you'll see an increase in oxygenation, period, every single time. You'll get more ATP production because you're going to light up your mitochondria to produce more energy. You're going to get some level of immune activation, so white blood cell activation, neutrophil macrophage activity tends to stimulate pretty quickly. But then there's the long term. In the long term, you're talking, you know, 20 hours, 40 hours, 60 hours, and more, you know, just an ongoing level, depending again on what you're trying to accomplish. Some of those long term, that would be more, you mentioned earlier, like SOD, so superoxide dismutase increases. You actually, not only will your mitochondria make more ATP, so they become more efficient, but your body will actually recognize this enormous amount of excess oxygen. Your body will start replicating mitochondria. So you'll actually start doubling and tripling mitochondrial content so that you could process the oxygen better. You'll get a release of stem cells. You get balance of the microbiome. You alluded to that earlier too. The angiogenic effect. So when you're rebuilding blood vessels or remodeling that capillary structure that I was saying earlier gets damaged. So to really rebuild that, that's a long-term benefit. And then more of the antimicrobial, like if you're trying to kill an infection of some kind, you would need higher pressure, higher oxygen, and you would need longer periods of session.
Yeah, I saw one interesting study on stem cell proliferation, and would love to hear your comments on what this thing can do to stem cells. And most of those protocols, I think there were 7 or 8 additional studies that were referenced in the paper that I was reading, which I'll link to in the show notes for people if you go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/HBOT podcast. But most of these treatments were anywhere from like 5 to 6 days a week for a total of 30 sessions. down to, I think, as infrequently as a total of 10 sessions. But for the stem cell effect, it looked like multiple times, like being in there almost every day for a period of time is what it took to get a significant, kind of like an anti-aging or longevity response. Is that correct?
Yeah. You know, what I tell people who are interested in the longevity, quality of life, anti-aging, you know, you would front load it for sure. So, you know, if you had access to it, you would do minimum 20 hours, but you're really looking to do like 40 to 60 hours over the course of a maybe 2 month period. And you're going to start, that's where you're going to really build a lot of those long-term benefits I was mentioning. After you do that, then you don't need that level of commitment to have, you know, the ongoing effect. But to really front load it that way, to be that intense about it in the beginning, that's where a lot of those benefits come
from. Sounds kind of similar like NAD, you know, another anti-aging tactic and mitochondrial health tactic a lot of people are using. You can do multiple IVs for, you know, anywhere from 4 to 5 days in a row of 750 to 1,000 milligrams of NAD, and then just kind of keep yourself, you know, cruising along with oral supplementation after that, or an occasional IV. So once you get a hyperbaric, you should spend ideally multiple days in a row inside it if you can, and then you can just start to use it, whatever, like one or two times a week after, something like that.
Exactly. I would spend, you know, the first 2 months roughly, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a week at least, and then spreading it out.
Now, how long would you need to be in there?
So typically, for this kind of effect, you're looking at about 60 minutes.
Okay.
At least, you know, some people, I love it in there, so I'll easily do 90 minutes at times, or even sometimes 2 hours. You hit a point where it's like diminishing return, you know.
You do. That's what I was going to ask you about, because when I first got it, and I actually want to ask you about this too. I have so many questions for you. I fall asleep like a baby in that thing. Like a well-slept baby, meaning I get in, and after about 10 minutes, you know, once it pressurizes and your ears are kind of done doing their popping, I get this, and I don't know if it's the full-on sensory deprivation just because nobody can bug you in there. I don't know if it's like what I call the car effect, where you can kind of hear the motor buzzing in the background, and there's like this mild vibration that lulls you to sleep, like when you were in the backseat of a car when you were a kid. I don't know if it's the actual gaseous interchange that's causing that type of effect, but I get super sleepy. And so the first time I got it, I actually slept in there on 4 separate occasions and had wonderful sleep scores. Just literally crawled in that thing for like 8 hours and slept the whole night in there, which obviously, because I'm a married man and value my relationship, is not something I make a regular habit of. But I gave it a try, and I fall asleep in there and slept in there the whole night multiple times. So first of all, is there any danger to me spending the night inside a hyperbaric chamber that you're aware of?
So let me start by saying the Viteris was built to actually have two people inside. So you might not be able to have to sacrifice your marriage and get hyperbaric.
I like to spread out.
I'm just kidding. I mean, you could do that, but yeah. So there's a few things. I think it's all of the above. Some people get very energized by it. So some people, you know, do a session and they feel like, you know, they want to get up and go work out, while other people get the exact experience that you're describing. I'm more the, I kind of zone out, and I often fade and take a nap in there. But you'll see things like on the sleep score, you might see, you know, you get really high HRV scores. So, you know, the increased oxygen actually helps increase heart rate variability. So that's one piece of that. The extra oxygen also stimulates parasympathetic activity. So it's, you know, for somebody who might be leaning towards you know, sympathetic fight or flight on a regular basis, you could feel a really strong shift into your parasympathetics. And so that often comes with, you know, the chemistry of relaxation. So I think there's a few reasons why you probably feel that. In addition, I do think the same thing, you know, you could let go, you know, nobody could bother you. So, you know, you could really relax, and the sensory deprivation piece I love too. So it's probably a combination of all the above.
Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You gotta check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder. You put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. Contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their Sexual Performance Booster, again, by Joy Mode, Your blood levels of arginine in your hemoglobin increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris. My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. usejoymode.com/greenfield. That'll give you 20% off your first order. Last night, I got my shipment in. That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones, the ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original. They've got one that's like a summer sausage. They have a garlic sausage. They have a teriyaki. It's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks. Well, if you're tired of spending hours on cardio with minimal results, then listen up because I got a game-changing fitness breakthrough for you. The Carol Bike, science-backed, time-saving solution trusted by experts for optimizing health and longevity. They use a special form of a workout called a rehit, which allows you to achieve superior health and fitness benefits compared to regular cardio in 90% less time. That's amazing. That's a lot of time, 90%. Studies show that by doing Carol's 5-minute workout just 3 times a week, you can improve your fitness by 12%, reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and even wind back your internal body clock by 10 years. The science is clear. Carol Bike is your ticket to a healthier and more vibrant life. You got to try it to believe it and to see what I'm saying. I mean, it's not like a walk in the park. When you're pushing hard in those intervals, you're pushing, but then it's just like over and it's done and it walks you through it. It's very motivating. It's 5 feet away from me right now. It's right here in my office. My cool little exercise toy in my office. So you get $250 off your Carol Bike. You don't have to wait any longer. You can join over 25,000 riders and visit carolbike.com today. carolbike.com.
All right. So not a huge issue from like an excess free radicals from too much oxygen being breathed or something like that, just to stay in there for a while.
Right. Not in the version you have. Like I said, I think what you'd see if you could do a like a gas analysis as you're in there, you'll see that the first hour and a half to 2 hours, you're going to see a pretty rapid increase in dissolved blood gas, you know, oxygen in your system. And then once you start pushing between 2 and 3 hours, it's really going to start leveling off. And then you're just going to be pretty close to saturation. So you're not going to, it's not going to hurt you in that version, but at the same time, it's not a super efficient use of time if you had other things you were trying to do besides sleep. In different chambers, if you were in higher pressure and higher oxygen levels, that would not also be the same. So, you know, you can reach levels of oxygen toxicity. And so with different equipment and different types of chambers, that's not the same story. But in the version that you have at home, it would be safe to do that.
Okay, got it. Now, I want to delve into some of these effects that you have alluded to. And my first question is, if we know there's direct pressure to oxygen molecules. And as you highlighted earlier, that allows oxygen to cross cell membranes more readily and enter into areas it normally would enter less readily, like plasma or synovial fluid in your joints or cerebrospinal fluid, or kind of like that interstitial space between the cells. Like, there's a lot of places that oxygen can go when it's under pressure and concentration like this that it normally wouldn't go. And of course, red blood cells are what we use to transport oxygen through the body. All these other body fluids can provide these alternate transfer routes for getting extra oxygen into different areas. But specifically when it comes to the red blood cells, do we see any type of effect on aerobic capacity, red blood cell production, erythropoietin production, anything from almost like an endurance or an aerobic capacity standpoint related to red blood cells?
So there are, and we could talk about that, there are performance, if we're looking at it that way, performance enhancement effects of hyperbaric oxygen, but they don't come from red blood cell changes. So the red blood cell adaptation, if you will, is really from a lack of oxygen. And so that's the whole like training at altitude scenario where, you know, even though air at 8,000 feet is also 21%, just like I'm at sea level right now. So at sea level, it's 21%. And, you know, at 8,000 feet, it's 21%. But the pressure is different at altitude. And because the pressure is different, there's less molecules. So at 8,000 feet, you're looking at about a relative 16% oxygen. And so the body recognizes that as hypoxic. And what you do is you build more red blood cells to make up for that deficiency. So the red blood cell adaptation that we have has everything to do with hypoxia, not hyperoxia. So because in a hyperbaric chamber, you're flooding your body with oxygen, you get other adaptations like your mitochondria recognizing the fact that there's more oxygen so that we need more mitochondria to process that, but you won't have a red blood cell reaction to that same process.
Okay. All right. Got it. So it's more all these other fluids that are delivering oxygen to tissue. So it'd be a little bit more of like a recovery repair type of scenario that would provide more than like a red blood cell direct effect.
Right. I mean, people use it for performance, like, you know, the extra oxygen. So the reason people, let's say on a performance side, the reason you would train at altitude to build more red blood cells would be then if you went to sea level, you have this excess oxygen carrying capacity, right? That's the whole thought process. So without that extra red blood cell carrying capacity, by being in a hyperbaric chamber, you are increasing your oxygen, even though you're not increasing your red blood cell count. And so you still have excessive oxygen to be used for performance, but it doesn't let, you know, it'll last, it, you know, as you get out of the chamber, it's already dissipating, you know, and you get, depends on how much pressure, how much oxygen, and how long you're in the chamber. But that oxygen may stay for, you know, 3 to 6 hours. It may stay for 6 to 9 hours. It may stay
for... So theoretically, if you had a bunch of reading or, you know, if I were going to go through my morning research journals, I could crawl in this thing and have more oxygen for a workout if I were to do a workout mid-morning or mid-afternoon, for example.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
That makes sense. Okay, so regarding another piece I wanted to ask you specifically about blood, is I know that hyperbaric oxygen can stimulate angiogenesis, so the growth of new capillaries and can build new circulatory systems, which is one reason that vascularization can be helpful for areas that have compromised oxygen delivery, like pockets of hypoxia in damaged or injured tissue, et cetera. First of all, is that correct?
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
All right. So do you get concerned? Because I interviewed Dr. William Lee recently, and we talked about his anti-angiogenic foundation, which looks into reduction of capillary growth to tumors, for example. Would there be any concern if one had like a pre-existing tumor or cancer or something like that in terms of angiogenesis to a tumor growth?
When I first, you know, 12 plus years ago, when we first started getting into this, hyperbaric was on the list of contraindications for cancer. And I'd say over the last 6 years, but especially over the last 2 or 3 years, the thought on that has changed dramatically. And a lot of that is owed to, you know, a lot of the work of, you know, Thomas Seyfried and Dom D'Agostino looking at, you know, metabolic causes of cancer. And so the understanding would be, you know, we just spent a weekend with them in LA last week.
Yeah, I saw you there at the Metabolic Health Summit.
Exactly. So, and that's what they were talking. You know, the whole thing was about, you know, metabolism of cancer, and, you know, one, looking at the glucose driving factors associated with cancer, But the other, the actual energy metabolism of the cell, of the cancer cell. So bottom line is, if you believe in and understand the metabolic concepts around cancer, you would say that, you know, basically these cancer cells are dysfunctional, but they have this specific metabolic dysfunction where they don't use oxygen to make ATP anymore. So what they're doing is they're fermenting lactose. They're using, you know, sugars, different types of sugars, and they're fermenting them in the absence, anaerobically, in the absence of oxygen. And so in this approach to cancer care, these people are doing different, you know, keto, fasting, right? There's certain medications, like diabetic medications like metformin and others, to really try to drive blood glucose levels down and then drive oxygen levels really high. Because if you basically, if a cancer cell is metabolizing sugar without oxygen, what you would be doing is you'd be starving it of the glucose, and then you'd be pushing the cell into aerobic respiration, which it can't handle. So cells that can't adapt die. And so if we start shifting the metabolism, we could start killing off a greater degree, naturally killing off through, you know, autophagy, naturally killing off these sort of broken and dysfunctional cells, so that we could actually, and at the same time, drive healthy cells, right? A normal healthy cell that's able to adapt actually loves this whole, you know, fat burning, ketosis, high oxygen environment. So you're shifting this whole environment to create, let's just say, extraordinary discomfort for a cancer cell, and at the same time, literally, you know, feeding and nourishing healthy cells to continue to be able to adapt. So long story short, it appears that the angiogenic effect of cancer cells has everything to do with increasing blood flow to increase glucose access, more blood vessels to deliver more sugar to make more energy. And so the angiogenic effect of hyperbaric is about delivering more oxygen. And so even though it's the same angiogenesis, if you're metabolically shifting the person away from glucose in the first place and you're increasing their oxygen, I wouldn't be worried at all. In fact, I would encourage using those two tools in that person versus worrying about the reason for the angiogenesis in the first place.
Okay. All right. Got it. That's good to know. All right. So we have formation of new blood vessels. We have the increased delivery of oxygen to a wide variety of tissues, including, I know, the brain, which is why this thing can be so darn effective for jet lag, where you're breathing poor air and lower amounts of oxygen, to TBI and concussion, where you have impaired oxygen delivery to neural tissue. But then there's this fascinating antioxidant response. And I threw this term around earlier, the concept of SOD, superoxide dismutase, which is an enzyme in the cells that can deactivate free radicals or superoxides, which are some of the more destructive free radicals. And from what I understand, hyperbaric is actually somehow stimulating upregulation or production of superoxide dismutase. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Are there any other antioxidant mechanisms that are affected by this?
I mean, there are, so here's the thing. People talk about the right? It's oxygen. So there's an oxidative reaction to hyperbaric, which is the opposite of what we're talking about here. So the interesting thing about it, it all goes back to really hormesis, right? So can we introduce a type of a stress to the body and then have the body react in a way such that it's increasing adaptation to whatever that stress is, right? So healthy stress equals healthy adaptation. So, you know, hyperbaric in many ways has this mild oxidative effect on the body. And so that the body's reaction to that is upregulation of its own natural antioxidant effect. So that's why SOD is so greatly you know, stimulated through that process.
Could you make an argument that because of that and the decrease in inflammation, because I know that that's another huge thing that you see in the literature, is a very significant drop in inflammation, which from a longevity and overall chronic disease standpoint is important, but from an exercise standpoint, you know, just like metformin or synthetic vitamin C or synthetic vitamin E or longer, you know, like 10 plus minute periods of time in the cold, we know any of those examples can blunt the hormetic response to exercise. So is this something that you think you wouldn't necessarily want to sit in for those couple of hours following an exercise session? Or have you seen any literature on the exercise effects of like post-exercise hyperbaric?
So there's no, or at least I haven't seen any research on, you know, where we place hyperbaric relative to a post-workout, you know, its effect overall on either improved healing / decreased, you know, hormetic effect. But what I would say is, yes, it absolutely reduces inflammation. And yes, because of the same mechanisms that it helps heal, you know, non-healing wounds, it's the same mechanisms that it would actually heal, you know, the damage associated with exercise. So, you know, with exercise, we're breaking tissue down purposefully with the idea that once we recover, you know, we're faster, we're stronger, et cetera. So, and so hyperbaric would increase the healing. The question you're saying is, does it also decrease the hormetic effect? You know, my understanding would be that there's a stimulus and then there's a response. So the stimulus was the exercise and you broke that tissue down. And now the inflammatory cascade that occurs because of that, it's all about cell signaling. That cascade is necessary for signaling a healing response. So while hyperbaric would reduce inflammation, the way it does it is through stimulating the healing response. So I feel pretty good about the fact that it's not going to negate the cell damage from the tissue. If you happen to do like a really hard, you know, central nervous system workout where you're really trying to exhaust the nervous system, or, you know, you're pushing PRs on a regular basis, you may want to delay the hyperbaric a little bit just to allow for that full inflammatory cycle to kick in. But ultimately, you're going to want to get in there and start healing stuff so that you could do it again.
Yeah, I've mostly been using it because I'll typically do some kind of a movement session in the morning around sometimes about 7 and 9 a.m. And then typically I'll do a harder workout sometime between about 5 and 7 p.m. And what I've been doing is after lunch, going into the hyperbaric with all the magazines and books that I want to go through for that afternoon, and I'll combine reading and a quick nap, or sometimes just crawl in there and take a nap. So I've got it spaced kind of in between the two exercise sessions anyways, just to play it safe. But I was just curious if you'd seen anything about that. So another question is this whole bacterial effect. And this was something I wasn't aware of until I read your book. But apparently there is an effect in terms of the way that HBOT synergizes with antibiotics, and also an effect on from almost like a bactericidal standpoint, meaning a drop in certain bacteria and fungi and viruses. That was a new one for me. So can you go into what the effect is in terms of the biome with HBOT?
Sure. So, you know, the full effect on the immune system, more or less, besides the, you know, anti-inflammatory piece, one is that it's going to upregulate your neutrophils and macrophages. So those are part of your white blood cells that help fight infection. So right off the bat, and that's a short-term benefit. So right off the bat, you're going to start getting an upregulation in your own immune system's ability to fight whatever infection it needs to fight. Outside of that, like I said earlier, even in traditional medicine, they're using hyperbaric oxygen for gangrene and osteomyelitis. So they're using it for really, really tough infections for a few reasons. One is most of these pathogens are anaerobic, meaning just like I was saying with cancer cells, these bacteria live without oxygen. So they actually thrive in a low or no oxygen environment. And they grow these biofilms around them, which actually helps protect them from oxygen and medication and other things we might throw in there to try to kill the infection. So it's almost like a wall that it builds up. So this hyperbaric environment actually, again, increases the oxygen level, obviously, in the body. So that creates a higher oxygen than what these pathogens are willing to accept, but also helps to break down the actual biofilm, making whatever other therapies we might be choosing for those infections much more effective. So there's a piece of it that has to do with, you know, killing bacteria who are anaerobes. But beyond that, I would say that even less powerful anaerobes like H. pylori or C. diff that are often found, E. coli even, in our intestines. So it's the same phenomenon where as you're increasing oxygen in the body, you're making it very uncomfortable for these anaerobes to thrive. And most of our probiotic are either aerobic, meaning they love oxygen, high oxygen, or they're at least oxygen tolerant. And so as your body just starts to bathe in this increased oxygen from the hyperbaric therapy, you're basically same thing. You're feeding those healthy bacteria. You're creating an environment that helps them to thrive and to balance. So at the same time that it's creating a high oxygen environment and making it very difficult for these anaerobes and these pathogens to live in our intestines, we are creating an environment of high oxygen, which actually makes the majority of our healthy bacteria, you know, very comfortable and to thrive in.
Okay. All right, got it. Yeah, it's really interesting just because I know, and I don't know if I will have released it by this point. I just recently did a podcast with Matt Cook where we really explored biofilms and SIBO in great detail, and even the fact that based on some of my own recent testing, I have some biofilm issues. So that's also been kind of a motivation for me to get into the hyperbaric. And as a matter of fact, on that last trip to LA where I saw you at the Metabolic Health Summit, I actually I went to Next Health, a clinic that I visit down there in LA, and almost every afternoon went in there and did my what I call my trifecta. I do an NADIV, and then I crawl in the hyperbaric, take a quick nap, get up, and do a 3.5 minute cryotherapy session. And one of my motivations for doing that is I just want to kill off this biofilm as fast as possible, so that hyperbaric combined with the NAD especially can be really,
NADs,
really
useful. Yeah.
Yeah. Over there, they had one of the big hard shell chambers, and same thing. I crawl in that thing, and within like 10 minutes, I'm dead to the world. Like, all my body wants to do is sleep, which is for me great because I'm not one of those guys whose brain turns off that easily. Okay. So now, how about bone? How about bone repair, bone formation? I know multiple research studies have shown this stem cell proliferation and stem cell building piece, which in and of itself is great news for anybody who doesn't want to do like a stem cell injection per se, or is in this for the anti-aging and longevity piece. But what about bone?
Yeah. So, you know, it's all about cell signaling, how our body's communicating once, it gets a stimulus of a certain kind. And so again, this increased oxygenation, in addition to, you know, the nitric oxide synthase, right, which they measure for almost a full day post hyperbaric from a stem cell standpoint, you know, such a powerful stimulator. There's a ton of growth factors, and these growth factors are the signals for healing and recovery. So you'll get, you know, different types of progenitor cells. You'll get, platelet-derived growth factors, you know, you'll get brain-derived growth factors, glial cell-derived growth factors, VEGF, you know, all of these are signaling tools that our body uses to spark, you know, healing response. And so not just fibroblasts, but also osteoblasts. So the cells that are going to heal, you know, ligaments and tendons, but also, you know, the cells that are going to start healing bone. So there are a few studies that I've seen looking at, let's say, post-fracture and, you know, speed of recovery, and certainly show a similar effect.
Now, this VEGF is one that you talk about in your book quite a bit. So can you highlight that one and explain what the importance of that one would be?
So these are all, I mean, these are all growth factors that I'm talking about, like BDNF, PDGF, VEGF. These are all things that are, again, signals. And so the VEGF has a lot to do. The VEGF also has a lot of work in cancer. So you'll see it show up so much in cancer research. And, you know, VEGF is a lot to do with the angiogenic effect. And so when we see rising levels of VEGF, we know that one of the things that's happening is there's going to be angiogenesis, neovascularization, you know, healing, recovery, and building of new blood vessels. And so, again, in certain circles, you know, that sounds very scary because they recognize that as, you know, an adaptation of a cancer cell. At the same time, you know, if you look a little bit deeper, you could also see how in so many other ways, especially in a healing capacity or in a performance capacity, that increased vascularization is huge for, you know, oxygen delivery.
Okay. All right. Got it. Now, what about the effects on connective tissue? You know, tendons, skin matrix. I know some people are using things like light therapy for that. Sure. Others are using peptides like thymosin beta or TB500, or in some cases BPC for the inflammatory component in conjunction with that. How about the effects on things like fibroblasts and collagen?
Yeah. So exactly. Those are the two main. So the fibroblasts and collagen growth are the two main mechanisms for skin healing. So same as healing a wound, yet it doesn't have to be broken down to a point of a non-healing wound. It could simply just be loss of the typical elasticity, or, you know, loss of the integrity. So it keeps cracking or breaking, or it's the beginning of a, let's say in a chronic case, like a beginning of a bed sore, but it doesn't have to be this, you know, enormous non-healing ulcer. It could just be the breaking down of skin the way we know it. And this is going to help stimulate that. Now we use, I love like red light, green light, you know, we use different light therapies. In addition, I don't think, by the way, we're talking about hyperbaric because we're talking about hyperbaric and I love it. But, you know, even in our clinic, we use multiple modalities. I don't, there's not a single modality that like by itself does everything we need it to do. So, but to me, it's a, one of those fundamental tools, because oxygen is such a fundamental nutrient that our body requires. So when you add oxygen to peptide therapy or oxygen to red light therapy or NAD or, you know, all these other modalities, you're just, you know, the synergy is always greater.
Yeah,
than,
you're stacking the effect. I've found that to be useful, and I'm fully aware, by the way, for those of you listening in, like sometimes I'll throw off something I'm doing at home, like a full body pulsed electromagnetic field or PEMF table or HBOT, and I realize some of these things are a little bit spendier. And I even know, you know, many people who listen in are health clinic owners or people like Jason who are running health facilities who want to add these to their facility. And I realize in a case like that, sometimes being able to monetize a purchase like this makes better sense. I'm lucky enough in that, you know, as an immersive journalist, I'm kind of putting a lot of these things in my home and using them in my business to blog about and to write about and to fill others in on. And I'm a voracious self-experimenter anyway, so love to toy around with this stuff. But, you know, PEMF is another example where if I consume some type of an antioxidant supplement, or even if I'm using, say, like plant medicine for a journey, laying down on that PEMF table and doing a full body or even a localized to the head PEMF treatment can amplify the effects of something like that, or something like a peptide injection, for example. And when you combine some of these biohacks, like doing hyperbaric along with, you know, things like certain nutrients or PEMF, you certainly get like this stacking effect that begins to make you feel just absolutely amazing. Now, regarding this whole stacking effect with HBOT, is there anything in particular that you found to be really useful as far as producing surprising effects when you administer pre or prior to hyperbaric, whether that's a treatment, an oil, a supplement, anything like that that you found to combine really well with hyperbaric?
I mean, hands down, my favorite combination from myself is high dose red light right before oxygen. So I do, you know, we have a particular, you know, red bed, we call it. So, you know, a pretty high dose, you know, 10 to 12 minute red light session, because of, you know, so there's parts of the hyperbaric that could become a little vasoconstrictive. Even though you're getting more oxygen, there's a bit of a vasoconstrictive effect. And so I love the idea of, you know, the red bed creating, you know, vasodilation, the synergy in the nitric oxide between the red light and the oxygen. So I love that sort of pre-treating with the red bed and then jumping into the hyperbaric chamber after that. I find that synergy to be like nothing else.
Yeah,
for me.
Another thing I've found to be useful, just because a lot of times, especially until I fall asleep inside that thing, I focus on really deep, deep breath work just to get a little bit of extra oxygen delivered. And I've even done, and this would be kind of a proceed at your own risk because you're zipped up in there by yourself, you know, in case you pass out, there could be risk. But I have done holotropic breathwork sessions inside the hyperbaric chamber. And, you know, one of the ideas is that was originally created by Stanislav Grof, I believe, as a way to get a lot of the effects from a DMT standpoint and a brain standpoint, is something like the use of LSD. And I've always noticed the ability to be able to kind of like journey or merge left and right hemispheres of the brain far more easily during one of these hour-long hyperbaric sessions that I do. But I started doing sessions like that, and even shorter breathwork sessions that my friend who's been on this podcast before, Niraj, he has this wonderful 21-day Soma breathwork program. And I have a bunch of audios on my phone that I've downloaded to my phone. So I'll put my phone in airplane mode and go in there and do this breath work. But man, doing the holotropic breath work, inside the hyperbaric, absolute game changer. And then the other thing that I do in there is there's another doc who's been on this podcast before. He makes these essential oils for specific purposes, and he has one called Inspire that kind of opens up your lungs. And, you know, it's got the things you would expect, like peppermint and rosemary, and I believe there's a little bit of cinnamon in there, and some very kind of uplifting, lung-opening kind of oils. And I'll sprinkle some of that in there and get in there and do breath work, and it's absolutely amazing.
Wow. You know, let me just add to that. So also, if you happen to do breath work and you're doing breath holds, I think you'd be also amazed to see how long after you've been in the chamber for a bit.
Oh, I've gone almost 6 minutes at the end of an holotropic breath work session.
Exactly. Now, let me just add to that too, just for you personally, but also for your listeners. You cannot hold your breath when you're transitioning between pressure. So it takes, you know, 5 or 8 minutes to get to pressure, and it might take another 5 minutes to get down from pressure. You could, once you're at, you know what I'm saying? When you're at pressure, like, you know, you're at like 4.5 PSI, you could do whatever you want at pressure. Okay. Cause once you're at pressure, your airways are already equalized, but you cannot hold your breath, let's say, at pressure.
Because you're not going to equalize.
Exactly. Okay. And then let the air out. So just make sure that during transitional periods going, you know, the initial pressurization and the depressurization, you breathe normally throughout those transition periods. But once you're at pressure, you can do whatever you want. Just for you, for safety, I just want to make sure.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Okay, cool. And speaking of safety, tell me if this is a myth, because someone found out that my kids go in there to lay around and read books, and they absolutely love it. They love to zip themselves up and do the hyperbaric, and I think it's wonderful for them based on everything that I've seen. But someone told me that there is risk of spontaneous combustion if you have something like a phone in there and it throws off a spark, or if you have pieces of paper such as a book that are rubbing together, and that you could literally, kind of like that movie Deadpool, just blow the whole thing up. Is this a concern?
Yeah. So that I cover so many, right? I think that's one of the reasons that hyperbaric never really got the understanding and recognition until now that it pretty well deserves, I think, is that there's just so many myths around hyperbaric. We could do a whole podcast just on that. But, you know, understand this. There's no risk of, you know, in other words, rubbing paper together right now in your house. You know, you're at 21% oxygen. You could light a lighter at 21% oxygen. It's going to burn because it's 21% oxygen, but it's not any more risk in or out. So inside that chamber, you're still 21% oxygen. You're compressing with 21% oxygen. The risk is in a hospital setting when you're at 100% oxygen and your entire environment that you're bathing in is 100% oxygen. You're literally the equivalent of being inside a green tank of oxygen. So at and you know, oxygen's not flammable, it's an accelerant. So you need something to be that initial, you know, sort of trigger anyway. But in a hospital setting, you're wearing very special clothing, you can't bring anything in there. It's a very regularized area because of, if there were a spark in that chamber, that could happen for sure.
Okay, so that's kind of trickle down from the bigger hospital setting.
Exactly.
Okay. Exactly. Any other risks that folks should be aware of when using one of these things, or contraindications?
I mean, the main contraindication, especially when we're talking soft chamber stuff, is just pneumothorax, right? If you have an airspace that you, which is a popped lung, basically, if you have an airspace that you cannot equalize, you can't go to pressure. You just can't, you'll never be able to get that particular airspace properly equalized with the environment. You know, so you might see over time too, Ben, if you ever have like a little allergy or congestion or something, you're going to have a hard time, you know, clearing your ears. You know, the whole thing is about, you know, can you equalize with your new environment in your air spaces, which is basically your lungs for the most part, your lungs and your ears. We have other air spaces too, but they tend to equalize pretty easily. So, you know, if you have a lot of ear pain, back off, like it's just not worth it. You know, go back tomorrow, or, you know, go out, do a sinus rinse and try it again if you want. But as long as you're equalizing and you don't have any other issues, there's really very few absolute contraindications the way pneumothorax would be. But there are some relative, like clearing your ears. There's certain chemo drugs that actually their mechanism works on superoxide dismutase primarily. So those are contraindicated for, especially for high pressure. But, you know, generally speaking, the equivalent, just so you know, the equivalent of the pressure that you're in is about somewhere between 9 and 10 feet underwater. So, you know, that's the amount of pressure. So as long as you feel comfortable, like, hey, I can get to 10 feet of water, I can go like the deep end of a pool without a problem, you're going to be fine.
Okay. So basically the main things we would be looking at would be for someone who's injured, oxygen delivery to tissue to speed return to pre-injury activity levels. And for people looking at it from the performance standpoint, obviously you get the increase in ATP synthesis from the hyperoxygenation and a removal of more of the metabolic byproducts that build up within tissue. But then you would also potentially get like the mitochondrial and stem cell and blood vessel proliferation response. And then if folks were sick, you know, if we're talking about autoimmunity like MS or Crohn's or inflammatory arthritis, you're looking at the anti-inflammatory component. If it's the case of the nerves, like you were talking, who was it? Did you say it was your brother who had?
It was me with the initial neuropathy, and then my stepdad with MS.
Oh, your stepdad, yeah. So with the nerves, it's actually allowing for repair of damaged nerves in the case of neurological conditions such as that, or even something like Parkinson's or concussion or TBI. And then in the case of, again, healing or recovery, you've got the stem cells, post-surgical recovery, things like that. And then finally, what you brought up earlier, the immune system component for people with Lyme, SIBO, C. diff, et cetera. Basically, you're giving aerobes the necessary oxygen for life while allowing for killing off of pathogens. I think those are the main benefits that I think I came across in your book and that I've discovered thus far. Did I sum it up pretty well?
I think that's a great summary. The only other thing I would add to that is on the performance side, because we often look at the physical performance, but we don't often talk about the mental performance. And so they're studying now out of Israel, especially this guy Shai Efrati, who's done a lot of research on hyperbaric, the mental or, you know, the sort of the brain performance effect of hyperoxygenation. So we know that, you know, the brain uses up about 20% of the body's oxygen. So the question becomes, is that 20% the total amount that the brain requires to function the way that we want it to? Or is that the total amount the body allows the brain to have because the body needs so much also on any given, you know, minute for its performance? And so what they do now is they're studying, you know, dual tasking. So complex motor, like so complex movement patterns with complex mental acuity tests, the combination, watching that with increased oxygenation. These folks are able to perform more complex motor and more complex mental tests.
Interesting. Okay.
Pretty consistently across the board.
Yeah. So, yeah. I haven't messed around too much with using like nootropics or something like that prior to just because honestly I'm mm-hmm, sleeping inside the thing and don't want to spark up my brain prior to sleep. But I'll have to mess around with that a little bit. Now what about exercise with oxygen therapy? I was actually doing that this morning. I did an exercise with oxygen therapy session on the VASPR where I breathe the pure oxygen and kind of cycle between that and hypoxia using in this case one of those Live O2 machines. What would be the difference? Because they will make claims that this thing will simulate, that doing exercise with oxygen therapy would simulate a hyperbaric and thus remove the need for crawling inside of a chamber. And I'm curious what your thoughts are on the whole hyperbaric versus the EWOT or the exercise with oxygen therapy scenario.
Yeah, so I get that question a lot. And, you know, I love hyperbaric, obviously, but I love oxygen modalities. So I like EWOT, I like ozone. You know, I'm not a purist when it comes to oxygen saying hyperbaric is the only one that works. It's just, you know, again, different tools for different goals and different purposes. So I think the biggest difference, just for people to understand, is that with EWOT, what you're doing is you're exercising. As you exercise, you're using up more oxygen. And then instead of breathing 21% oxygen the way we all are right now, you're breathing maybe 95, 98% oxygen. So you're basically, you're increasing the demand through exercise. So you're utilizing a much higher degree of oxygen and you're increasing supply. So as you increase demand and supply, you're going to turn over a lot more oxygen in that process than you would if you were just breathing normal ambient air while you're exercising. So from an oxygen delivery standpoint, I think it's great. The biggest difference is that you're still relying completely on red blood cells to do that work. So in order for this to work, you have to deplete your red blood cells and have them cycle through. And with hyperbaric, first of all, it's passive. So depending on the issues, right? Some people can't do the mobility that they need to get an EWOT to be performing, you know, optimally. So hyperbaric is obviously it's a passive therapy. You're just laying there and breathing. But more than that, it's also bypassing the red blood cells and increasing your oxygen just by pure diffusion.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense. And plus, I guess for people who can't exercise, obviously, or who are repairing an injury, the EDOT might be a little bit more difficult to pull off. Okay, cool. There's a ton of stuff here. And your book really delves even more deeply into the science. It's a really good manual for those of you who want to wrap your heads around this even more. The book is called Oxygen Under Pressure, and you can get it on Amazon. And then also, I know the folks at HBOT USA, Jason's company, they've worked out some discounts and some ways for you to get your hands on a hyperbaric soft shell chamber for your home that might allow you to overcome any of the price point issues. So if you go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/HBOT, that's where you can get a special offer for one of these soft shell chambers for your own home or for your clinic, or even just find a practitioner who has one of the soft shells if you want to go try it a few times before getting one for yourself. And then also, all the show notes for everything we talked about, studies, Jason's book, everything, I'm going to link to if you go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/HBOT podcast. That's bengreenfieldfitness.com/HBOT podcast. Aside from that, I think that covers most of what I wanted to ask you, Jason. Is there anything else you want to throw in there?
I think it's a great summary for people just getting started. You know, we do have a channel for YouTube, HBOT USA. We put out a few videos pretty regularly. So for people just looking and learning and wanting more, there's probably some content there that they could latch onto and keep their education going.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. All right, folks. Well, I hope this has been helpful for those of you who needed to kind of wrap your head around HBOT, how it works, what it is, and how to use it properly. So again, show notes are at bengreenfieldfitness.com/HBOT podcast. And then you can get your hands on one of these chambers if you go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/HBOT. Jason, thanks so much for coming on and sharing all this stuff with us, man.
Of course, Ben, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
All right, folks. I'm Ben Greenfield along with Jason Sonner signing out from bengreenfieldfitness.com. Check out this hyperbaric thing. It's absolutely amazing. It's been a game changer for me. And until next time, have an amazing week.
Well, thanks for listening to today's show. You can grab all the show notes, the resources, pretty much everything that I mentioned over at bengreenfieldfitness.com, along with plenty of other goodies from me, including the highly helpful Ben Recommends page, which is a list of pretty much everything that I've ever recommended for hormones, sleep, digestion, fat loss, performance, and plenty more. Please also know that all the links, all the promo codes that I mentioned during this and every episode help to make this podcast happen and to generate income that enables me to keep bringing you this content every single week. So when you listen in, be sure to use the links in the show notes, use the promo codes that I generate, because that helps to float this thing and keep it coming to you each and every week.